Rob Kerr's Flames at 5 starts now.
Flames at 5 brought to you by Pete the Plumber, the superhero residential plumbing and heating. Give him a call, 403-257-1766, or visit PeteThePlumber.com for all your plumbing and heating needs. A little later on Inside Hockey for Calgary Co-op, Dave Alter from The Athletic and TO will join us. We'll talk about the Leafs. I hope people know Toronto's having a good year. I don't know if anybody knows about it. They got good kids. I don't know if anybody knows. We'll bring Dave on. He can tell us. All right, now, courtesy of Eastside Kia, we bring on our friend, our pal, our buddy, Eric DeHatchuk from the Globe and Mail, globesports.com. How are you?
I'm good. So, kids, you're talking about kids today. Well, I wrote about a kid today, Matthew Tkachuk.
I know.
And apparently he was quite the sensation at morning skates today, I'm told, or at least that's what social media made it seem.
Well,
like.
I'm not surprised. I got a phone call from our sister station yesterday. They wanted me to come on and talk about Matt Tkachuk because I think he played in London, which might be close. I don't know. And he might have played with their kid, so maybe there was some interest.
Yeah, exactly. Well, Marner and Matthews and all those other things. But I think he's, a lot of people wanted to give him a hard time for the game against the Oilers on Saturday. Yeah. How did you feel about this? I mean, I thought, you know, in this day and age, if you're down in a game like that and you want to, you know, get out there and you know, make yourself known to the opposition and say that this isn't right, I'm okay with that, you know. I'm okay with that.
That's what his makeup is. That's what that team needed more of. You know, watching that game, and Eric, I don't, you know, you've seen this battle in many incarnations. It's not truly what it used to be, and it won't be until it gets back to the playoffs.
Right.
But you know how detrimental a butt kicking like that in front of your own fans is by that team. Somebody had to care. And to me, Matt Tkachuk was one of the few guys that seemed to care.
Yeah, that's my take on it, too. And that's why, I guess I shouldn't pay as much attention to social media, but I couldn't help but notice that especially the Oilers fans were getting all over. And I'm thinking to myself, you know what, if that kid played for Edmonton and the situation was reversed, and it has been reversed for a long time, notwithstanding, you know, Edmonton won all the games this year. If you look at Calgary's record against the Oilers over the past 10 years, it's been pretty good. And a lot of the gloating has been going on by fans on this side of the of the battle or the skirmish or whatever you want to call it now, because it hasn't been that great a battle, as you say, for a while. But I like him. I haven't spoken to him much. I talked to him when they made the Memorial Cup and went up to Red Deer to spend some time with him and Ulevi, you know, partly because it looked like there was a chance that they could fall to the Flames. Was impressed by him, knew his dad, you know, covered him for a long time in the National Hockey League. Was surprised that he made the team, because I know that the plan was that, you know, all things being equal, they would like to send him back for one more year of junior to just sort of, you know, that's just the more traditional path. But you know, he played himself onto the team, and they, you know, they had to change the plan, and that's good. I mean, to me, that shows a management group that is willing to if you have a preconceived notion, you are willing to allow to adapt from the position you staked out by what you see on the ice. And I think that's, you know, it's proven to be the right thing. Now, you know, a year from now or 2 years from now, I mean, we were saying almost the same things about Sam Bennett when he came in his first season. He was a guy that, you know, to play really feisty, the comparisons to Doug Gilmore were there. And you know, they were fair, I thought. And so somehow the progression that they had hoped to see from Bennett hasn't happened. And I know you guys have been kicking it around, not just today, but for a little while right now. Is he a center? Is he a winger? Would he be better served to play on the wing? Would he be better served to be in the minors? You know, to me, I mean, if you're asking me, you probably haven't, but I'm going to tell you anyway, I would put him on the wing right now. Okay. And I just think that it's an easier position to play. The comparison that you frequently hear internally in the Flames organization is, you know, we don't want to go down the same path that Montreal did with Galchenyuk, because Galchenyuk came up as a center, drafted as a center. They hid him, you know, for lack of a better word, on the wing for a number of years, and then finally made the decision to move him to center. And he's flourished as a center, notwithstanding the, you know, two injuries he's had. He's been really good. So, to me, the Galchenyuk example is proof that for the first 3 or 4 years, a guy can play on the wing and still eventually make the transition to center when you become physically more mature, when you get more comfortable and confident in the National Hockey League. If you move him to the wing now,
right,
it isn't a life sentence. And I think it takes some of the pressure off him right now in the moment. So that's what I would do. It's just not a 200-foot game if you're playing on the wing. So it's never easy in the National Hockey League, but it is easier to play that position. And I think that if he did play that position, I think he would relax a little bit more. He would get back to being the player that we saw last year playing with Frolik and Backman. I get why they don't want to break up that line right now, because Kachuk's been such a good fit on it. But I would almost be tempted to give Bennett 10 games there and maybe move Kachuk around a little bit, because I think he could play on any line right now. And maybe playing with those two guys, Backman and Frolik, gets Bennett back on track too.
Here's what I like about Matt Kachuk as opposed to some of the other young Flames players that have come up. And I think in many ways I'm guilty as I'm a guilty party in this. I think for so many years the Flames never had good young players. So all of a sudden they started having good young players, and I think we got ahead of ourselves because we don't remember what good young players were all about. Matt Kachuk has come in. He wasn't supposed to make the team. He did. And not only has he made the team, he's playing on the top line with the top defensive responsibility early on. Sean Monahan was kind of sheltered his first couple of years. He's not a centerman. Sam Bennett almost got built up more because of his injury and the fact that he wanted to come back and how bad he wanted to come back, and he came back with a lot of energy.
Yeah.
Matt Kachuk has just gotten better as the season has gone on. Let me ask you the other one. This one perturbs me a little bit.
Yeah.
That it was not my point. It was Dean who was the first guy. Dean brought it up this morning about sending him to the American Hockey League. Why not send him to the American Hockey League?
Well,
I'm talking about Bennett now.
As opposed to playing him in the NHL on the wing.
Yep.
So for what, 2 weeks?
2 weeks.
Or
go down. Get your
similar to what Edmonton's done with Puljujarvi.
Yeah. Go down. Get your confidence back. Play up the middle. Just play every situation, because by his own definition, by the team's own definition, and by his own play, when he is at his ultimate confidence, cockiness even, he is a great player. I don't think he has that right now.
Yeah.
He might be pouting because he got sad. He might pout because he goes down. But to me, put him down there. Let him get his confidence and his swagger back.
Yeah, well, I guess that would be a possibility. I think he could do it by shifting him to the wing and keeping him in the National Hockey League. And partly it's, I think they need him here. I think they need Sam Bennett playing better than he is right now if they want to compete for a playoff spot. So I'm not sure that, sending him to the minors, especially if it was just a short cameo thing. Like, if you're talking about 1 to 2 weeks, I'm not sure that would necessarily accomplish very much in terms of getting his confidence back on track. Now, having said that, if you tried him on the wing, and we're kind of in a weird situation because, now you've got three games, and then you've got the All-Star break, and then you've got the break after that. It's probably too late to do it right now. They've got three games and four nights, and now you just have to play, I think, and see if you can get points. That's the other thing. I mean, they need to start, getting points. The top three teams in the Pacific Division have created a gap now on the teams that remain. So now you're firmly in the wild card race, and while you have a wild card position, it's by no means is it secure. So so you need to start winning, and I think 3 out of 6 points on this trip is critical to go into the All-Star break, because I think if you get 3 out of 6 or 4 out of 6, you're probably still in the top 8. But I would be tempted to try him on the wing first, and if it doesn't work, and if the production doesn't come, and if he looks frustrated, then maybe the next resort is sending him to the minors. I don't think he's at that point yet.
Eric Dachuk from the Globe and Mail, our guest on the South Street Burger guest hotline. Since we're talking about the local hockey heroes, I'm not sure if you've heard, but it seems like the future of the general manager has been thrown somewhat into question. And I don't want to say by an ear, by irresponsible journalism. I think Elliot Freeman's done a nice job of chronicling this. And it was on the morning show today suggesting that, he does not have a new deal and maybe he doesn't come back. Where are you at on the possibility of a change at that position?
Well, I think it would be very short-sighted if they did that. I mean, you know, go back to the moment when they were introducing Bradtree Living as the general manager. Why did they hire him? You know, Brian Burke said he was the, you know, ultimately he put together a list of people that he wanted to talk to, and Tree Living's name was at the top of all those lists. Once he spoke to Brad, he said, "I didn't feel I needed to speak to anybody else because he impressed me so much with his ideas and his energy and just his forward-thinking vision of where to go." So that was 2.5 years ago, and I think it was either said or at least, you know, implied that you know, when you do hire a young general manager, somebody who has apprenticed as an assistant general manager but has never been that guy where the buck stops there, you know, you understand that there will be a learning curve. And so in the same way that, you know, we're talking about Sam Bennett's learning curve, Matthew Tkachuk's, Johnny Gaudreau's, Sean Monahan, the same general rules of thumb that apply on the ice also apply in the management suite. You know, you go out and you sign, you know, Mason Raymond and it doesn't work out. You sign Derek Englund and it works a little bit better. But you know, you make decisions and some of them work out and some of them don't. But I think that if you look at the organization today compared to where it was 2.5 years ago, I think that they've taken positive strides. And has it been a straight upward curve? No. But then, you know, that rarely happens in professional sports. So I think he's done a really good job. And I think the organization has invested 2.5 years. And I think he's a better general manager today than he was when he first started, a more confident general manager. His voice is known among his colleagues in the league. You know, how are you further ahead if you decide, no, he's not our guy, we're going to go out and hire someone else? You know, is there an experienced guy out there that you think would be better? I can't think of anybody. And so, and then if you decide that you want to bring an inexperienced guy in, then you've hit the reset button and you're starting all over again. So I just think that it would be, I mean, I get why they haven't signed him to a contract extension, because that's the way they want to do business here.
Sure.
That's fine. I think everybody wants to have security. That's why players want long-term contracts, because it provides security. I think the same is true of coaches. I think the same is true of managers. But I think that if you evaluate the work that he's done, the work has been very good. And I think if you project where this team is going and sort of the confidence that he's getting as a manager, it makes no sense to me. It makes no sense to me that you would even ponder a change right now. It's not a disaster. It's trending in the right direction.
Yeah.
The team is younger. It's better. It's, you know, it's maybe not where you want it to be in terms of its development, but there are good pieces in place. And these good pieces, as they mature with a new coaching staff, I think are going to pay dividends within 1 to 2 years right now.
I know that the story came up on Saturday during the game. So The next part that I am going to say is somewhat counterintuitive and actually factually incorrect. But something tells me if they didn't get their doors blown off by their provincial rivals at home, it's probably not carrying the day.
No, you're probably right. But but you make a great point there, or you imply a great point, which is that you don't make long-term decisions for your organization on the basis of one ugly loss. And that's what that was. That was an ugly loss.
I mean,
there's no point in sugarcoating it. It was an ugly loss. Edmonton, you know, had played the night before. They were playing their backup goaltender. The situation was right for you to go in there and win, and you'd played a good game against them in their building the week before. I think everyone just assumed that they were going to beat them, and then not only did they lose, but they lost in a really unfortunate way. And so, you know, but if you made every decision on the basis of that, then you would be constantly trading players, you would be constantly firing people, and you would eventually be one of those organizations that, you know, that doesn't have a direction and doesn't have stability. I mean, what makes the Calgary Stampeders so good? You know, they are good because there is a continuity to them and a structure and a hierarchy that works. And so everybody comes in and everybody knows what their job is. And, you know, there's a year after year consistency there. And I think it comes from stability. So if you get a reputation as an organization that the minute you hit a little bit of a swell in the river that you're going to throw everybody overboard, then you never get anywhere. You know, you're just constantly, you know, bailing at that point. And so, you know, when I see organizations and it doesn't happen so much in professional sport, but there was a time when people would just do knee-jerk things. Mm-hmm. And I think that a knee-jerk reaction never works. It never works. And so, you know, to imagine that would be the right response to one very disheartening loss is ridiculous, really.
So let's leave the local hockey heroes and let's talk about another story that is percolating, but is along these same lines, and that is the Boston Bruins, who really had a tough week. And Claude Julien remains one of the longest, I think one of the three longest tenured coaches in the National Hockey League after Jack Capuano got let go last week. There seems to be a watch in place there. Are we dealing with an inevitability here?
Maybe, but the one thing I would say to that is that, you know, that there has been sort of speculation about Claude Julien's future in Boston the last couple of years after the playoffs didn't go the way that they thought. And to the Bruins' credit, they said, no, Claude Julien is a good coach. He is an established coach. You know, his track record suggests that it would be hard to do better than him. And so they did not do the knee-jerk thing, and they kept him on, and they said, you know, let's, you know, keep going with this to see with this regime to see where we're at. And I do think, and I know I've said this to you before, that once in a while it you do get to that point where the voice, you know, the echoes and people aren't hearing it anymore. And it looks a little bit from the outside as if that's what's happening in Boston. So, but I think that if they made a change there, you know, they can reasonably say, and I think the Islanders could reasonably say that after 7.5 years with Jack Capuano, you know, we gave this guy an opportunity. We know that, you know, the next step is that he's going to get hired by somebody and he's going to go and do a good job there. In the same way that, you know, when Barry Trotz gets let go, you're pretty sure he's wherever he lands next, he's going to do a good job. Bruce Boudreau gets let go. All of a sudden, Minnesota's the top team in the Western Conference. These coaches that are well established and have good track records are going to go in and they're going to have success. And knowing full well that if you let Claude Julien go, he will probably be a very successful coach at his next NHL stop. Sometimes it's still the necessary thing to do just to get a fresh voice in there. And you notice I didn't say the right thing to do I don't think it's ever the right thing to do to fire the coach because the players don't respond anymore, because the general manager has allowed, you know, some of those players that have been there to get older and not been able to replace them. And so, but sometimes it's the necessary thing to do, and it wouldn't surprise me if something, you know, gives in Boston fairly soon.
It just, this one is one of the, you know, at least Capuano, for, you know, all intents and purposes, came after a win, and you know, maybe not surprising, but it was a little surprising, the timing. It's just watching these Boston losses and then watching the media have to go in, and I do believe that management has created somewhat of this situation where, because there's no formal endorsement, now it's almost a death watch.
Yeah, well, and that's right, but I also think that, you know, you know, what can they say? I mean, if they formally were to say, no, you know, we're going to, you know, play it out until the end of the season and then make the change in 3 weeks, you know, it's a challenging situation that they find themselves in. But I always find when you get to the point where you're waiting for the other shoe to drop, and that's just not fans and media, that's players too, then you almost have to make a change too. And when players are waiting for the other shoe to drop, you can feel that when you walk in the dressing room. I haven't been in the Boston Bruins dressing room all season, so I don't know that I can feel that, but I suspect that the people who are in there every day can feel that. That the players themselves are waiting to see, you know, is he going to be here this week? Is he going to be here next? And it affects performance. It just does. Mm-hmm. You know, in the same way that any uncertainty that you have in your workplace affects performance, it affects professional ice hockey players too. And so I think that that's the situation that Boston is in. And I don't think that there's any way to really remedy that. I don't think, you know, statements from, you know, managers and presidents of team are going to allay those concerns. And I think that once that sort of slippery slope starts, that it's a very hard thing to reverse.
Good stuff, my friend. We'll hook up with you again on Wednesday. We'll get Al involved, the East-West Hot Stove. Thanks for doing this.
Okay, thanks, Rob.
Eric DeHatchek from the Globe and Mail, globesports.com, joining us down the South Street Burger guest hotline. South Street Burger. And bring the family to one of four Calgary locations and enjoy a quality meal without worrying about a trip or an expensive tab. Visit southstreetburger.com for details. Of course, Eric DeHatchek joining us for East Side Kia. When we come back, We'll spend some time with the Pat. We haven't talked to David Alter in a couple of seasons, but we're glad to have him back on board. He's writing for the Athletic TO. We'll ask him about that. We'll also ask him about the Toronto Maple Leafs, a team that I can't help wonder. I cannot help wonder if they are not a little bit ahead of the curve of where everybody thought they would be. That's coming up just after 4 o'clock. But when we come back, the leaking point, we'll go back. Why do we have to revisit it? Well, sometimes you need to learn from your lessons. Calgary losing, taking one on the chin on Saturday against the Oilers. We'll revisit that when we come back. Sportsnet 960, The Fan.
The big show continues on Sportsnet 960, The Fan. Brought to you by The Comedy Cave. Tickets always $10. If it's comedy you crave, come to The Cave.
Welcome back. Flames at 5. Pete the Plumber, the superhero residential plumbing and heating. Give him a call, 403-257-1766, for whatever your plumbing or heating or even electrical need might be. David Alter from the Athletic and TO will join us on Inside Hockey coming up in just a couple of minutes. We'll take a look at the opponent tonight, the Toronto Maple Leafs. But time now for the Leaking Point, brought to you by DL Basement Systems. All things basement-y, basement waterproofing, foundation repair, concrete leveling, radon gas mitigation, all across southern Alberta. Give them a call. Check them out. DL Basement Systems. Time now for the Leaking Point, and it came rather early in the first period at 5:58.
Here comes Pouliot in. Slides it right wing side. Eberle waits, shoots, and scores!
Going to get a goaltending change.
Jordan Eberle sneaks one by Chad Johnson. Glove side and just inside the near goalpost.
Just like that, 5:58 in, you heard Lou say it. Goaltending change. 3 goals on 4 shots on Chad Johnson. Brian Elliott would come in. Calgary would get 3 more, so essentially, effectively, this becomes a loss for Brian Elliott because the Flames got back to 3. But the bottom line is that was your leaking point right there. You weren't prepared to play. You weren't prepared to compete. Your goalie wasn't good enough. You end up losing the hockey game. That is your leaking point, brought to you by DL Basement Systems. All things basement-y, basement waterproofing, foundation repair, concrete leveling, radon and gas mitigation in southern Alberta. Check them out. DL Basement Systems. Of course, they bring you the Hot Stove Lounge. Live from Shanks Crowfoot Terrace in the Northwest, it is Flames at 5 for Pete the Plumber. When we come back to Toronto, we go. Our old pal David Alter will join us. We'll talk about the Maple Leafs next on Inside Hockey for Calgary Co-op. Sportsnet 960, The Fan.
Some guests on Sportsnet 960 appear on the South Street Burger guest hotline. South Street proudly pairs with craft beers made in this great city. Find out more about this and our 4 fantastic locations at southstreetburger.com.
You have the scores on your phone. This is where you get in-depth analysis and opinion on the sports that matter to you. Sportsnet 960, Calgary. Back to Rob Kerr's Flames at 5, only on Sportsnet 960, The Fan.
Welcome back. It is Flames at 5 for Pete the Plumber, the superhero residential plumbing and heating. Bottom of the hour, we will have Flames warm-up as the Calgary Flames taking on the Toronto Maple Leafs tonight. The start of 3 and 4 nights for Calgary all through Eastern Canada. In Montreal tomorrow night, a day off, and then they'll take on the Ottawa Senators on Thursday. Then it's the All-Star break. So the Flames on the road until the All-Star break, desperately looking for some semblance of confidence, some semblance of goaltending, need to get their game back, or they head into the All-Star break kind of limping along like this. Might be on the outside looking in real, real, real quick. So we will get you to that at the bottom of the hour as Pat will take over. Derek and Lou will join him. And a reminder, same deal tomorrow as the Flames are in Montreal. Time now for Inside Hockey, brought to you by Calgary Co-op. Don't let the flu take you out of the game. Visit Co-op's Pharmacy for a flu shot today. A pleasure for us to reconnect with one of our dear friends, David Alter, now of the Athletic TO, and he covers the Maple Leafs, and I'll get to the Maple Leafs in a second, but David, be hard for me not to say that I haven't been paying attention. Tell me a little bit about what's going on with the Athletic and what you guys are doing in Toronto.
Yeah, so this is exciting. I appreciate you giving the platform to do this. What's happened is the Athletic, which started in Chicago, some guys who funded an app in San Francisco called Strava, they made a next venture in sports journalism. So in Toronto and much like across Canada and in Calgary, there's been no stranger to layoffs that have been kind of happening in journalism. So a lot of ex-journalists have kind of been signed on for full-time jobs with this new venture that some venture capitalists are funding. So we have some runway, and we're making quite a dent in the Toronto market, and Chicago's already been established. Toronto's number 2, and there's a couple more new markets coming in later this year. So it's been really exciting and really fun to do, and it's nice to actually be able to do my job again. So it's really fun.
What's the adoption like, Dave? I mean, there's no shortage of conversations about the changing face of the media and how we consume it. But how have fans taken to the program?
It's been overwhelmingly positive. I thought at first, you know, there's a lot of cynicism and pessimism in this market that you think that no one's going to shell out a couple of bucks for a paywall type service. But I think people see the need that a lot of the legacy newspapers don't have the length of time to do longer big feature pieces that they would normally be able to do. And so that's given us the platform to be able to do that. And we've had some meetups in the market too, just to kind of meet the subscribers, and we're growing exponentially by the day. And it's a younger demo, but there's some older people too, and it's been fantastic. We've been able to do things that just based on our resources that some of the newspapers used to do and haven't been doing anymore. So it's been really positive here.
Well, anything that will bring good content and needed content to the marketplace and to the sports fan, I think we're all in favor of. So best of luck with that. David Alter, our guest down the South Street Burger Guest Hotline. Let's switch gears and talk about the Toronto Maple Leafs. Am I getting ahead of myself here? I mean, we've heard the rebuild term in Alberta quite a bit, mostly with the Oilers and then recently with Calgary. We've seen rebuilds in places like Chicago a couple of decades ago or a decade ago, even LA. And sometimes rebuilds take forever. Sometimes they take different coaches and different incarnations. But it seems like that the rebuild in Toronto has taken very quickly and is actually ahead of the curve. Is that a fair assessment?
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely it is. It's weird. They didn't expect a lot of things to fall into place. They didn't expect Mike Babcock to spurn Detroit after many years there and go to Toronto, even though they knew it was a possibility. It certainly wasn't expected. Then they got Lou Lamoriello, an established GM, who's kind of at least changed some of the culture things that, although may seem old school on the face of it, maybe this market needed at least in the early going to kind of set some standards and practices and conduct in the locker room, all that stuff. Then you get the number one pick in the draft. Of course, we know that if you can get a franchise player there, that accelerates a lot of things. So Austin Matthews has been the number one story in Toronto this season without a question. And up until last night, he was third in goals scored, and that's for a rookie. So he's taken the market by storm. Mitch Marner didn't even get a sniff at the AHL because he wasn't eligible for it because of his age and eligibility back to junior. He makes the team, and now everyone's kind of looking at them as perhaps, you know, maybe a few years down the road, that's next Kane and Taves type of duo, but younger. So this has been an embarrassment of riches in terms of upfront talent, and because of that, they've been in the standings, they've been performing far and better than they expected, and playoffs have certainly been the talk of it. They're probably not going to mortgage the future by doing anything crazy at the deadline, but the playoffs is certainly a possibility, especially how weak the Atlantic Division's been this year.
And Dave, the brain trust is where I just want to spend a couple of minutes, because nothing happens in a vacuum. I don't think Mike Babcock has his success without Lou Lamoriello and vice versa and Brendan Shanahan in there, but if you had to evaluate it, I mean, who's had the greater impact? Because Babcock, as you said, Babcock was much sought out. He is the highest paid coach and is there for a long time, but he has not come in and rested on his laurels. Who of the kind of the off-ice major players, who's had the biggest impact?
I think Mike Babcock, without question, has been the biggest off-ice impact, because it's a matter of, look, the Leafs have had a first half of the season in the 6-7 years I've covered them full time where they've had a record as good as this, but then they've had the projected tail off in the second half of the season because they were quote unquote playing the wrong way, getting heavily outshot and just getting lucky on the other side. And then when it came to when the games got tighter defensively, the Leafs didn't know how to respond to that, and they would go on a losing streak to fall and slide out of the playoffs. But since Mike Babcock came in the summer of 2015, he's reformed the way the Leafs approach the game. He's done this five-man offense, five-man defense, and constant pressure in the offensive zone. And on a somewhat regular basis, they are outshot attempting the opponents. That's been a big thing about the Leafs in terms of when you watch them, they're not getting destroyed even in games when they win handily. The offense quite hasn't been there in previous years, and defensively, they're still managing to kind of hold on and protect. So I think from a systemic standpoint off ice, it has to be Mike Babcock, just because he's totally changed the outlook of every player and how they approach the game.
With David Alter from The Athletic and TO, our guest on the South Street Burger guest hotline, as we're taking a look at the Maple Leafs. The flip side to this, and sometimes I think that when I have these conversations, they're a little bit inside hockey because, you know, for the fan, I don't think the fan really cares. But I have always found Lou Lamoriello to be a very interesting guy for the way he goes about his business, which is completely different than 30 other teams or 29 other teams. What has his influence been like in Toronto?
I think his influence has just been running a tight ship. One thing that probably stands out the most is you're getting fewer and fewer leaks of big news. Since Lamoriello came in, there's been none of the insiders of hockey leaking trades. The trades are usually broken once the team has kind of let it loose, especially with signing extensions or contract extensions, I should say. That's been the biggest thing, and that's kind of Lou and his intimidating way of just making sure that no information flows outside of his purview. So I think that's a big thing. Inside the locker room, he's been one to make sure that the appearance and the way the players show up to the building is all the same. There's no facial hair allowed. It's very New York Yankees-esque, but he's old school that way, and he rests on the fact that if they are professional, the way they show up to the rink and the way he wants it to be done, it changes the behavior of the team going forward. And other little things like only the head coach and GM are allowed to talk, and none of the other assistants or anything can address the media. They want a uniform voice and a professional approach, and that's exactly what Lou Lamoriello has brought. And some say it's old school, and there are some times where you kind of think, well, this is a little bit too old for the 21st century, but I think for how bad and how bad that culture was in the Leafs organization in 2014-15, that someone like him was needed to kind of flip the script a little bit. So now they've kind of got it back on the level.
But Dave, is that sustainable in Toronto? Because your marketplace where you work is different than any other marketplace in this league. And I think of, you know, the day and age we live in, Austin Matthews is a godsend. You know, superstar players don't come around all the time. But because Lou, you know, has certain ways, he doesn't like rookies out there, it seems counterintuitive to the way the game is marketed now.
It is. And you know what? I think if Lou had his way, Austin Matthews would not have been at the All-Star game.
Right.
And Austin Matthews would not have got the Schedule A and B bonuses that come with rookie contracts. He got away with that with Adam Larson, who was a fourth overall pick, who at that spot would normally get all these scheduled rookie bonuses, but under Lou Lamoriello, he didn't, and he won that battle where in Toronto, he had to be pushed a little bit, but eventually there was a consensus voice that you can't do that to someone like Austin Matthews. With how much the game is trying to grow in the United States, for someone like Austin Matthews to not be in the All-Star game, he would have faced an immense amount of pressure from the league. And we've seen that. We saw the first circumventing of contracts with that Ilya Kovalchuk in Jersey. When he tried to sign that 15-year deal, he got vetoed by the league. So there has been some pushback in certain things where Lou has not won out. And so I think when you saw those kind of compromises that Lou allowed in Austin Matthews' situation, I think it can work, and you'll see even more pushback from that as the years go forward and as this team competes on a consistent basis.
Talking about the Toronto Maple Leafs with David Alter from the Athletic TO, the Athletic TO in Toronto. We're talking Leafs and Flames tonight. He's joining us down the South Street Burger guest hotline. Let's deal with the on-ice product. Is this team, I mean, right now, second in the National Hockey League in power play, fourth in penalty kill, special teams are terrific. Is this, you know, talking about sustainable, is this a team that's, you know, on a really good run this year, or is this now, have they transformed their identity so we should expect them to be this every year moving forward?
It's tough to say because the offense has been there and the offense has covered up a little bit of the issues that the Leafs currently have right now. I mean, they're out without their top defenseman, Morgan Rielly. He'll miss his third game. The goaltending, they made a huge bet on Frederik Andersen, who had some success in the playoffs and has played a fair number of games in this league, but has not been the undisputed number one starter in a market, especially not in a market like Toronto before. So those were big bets that the Leafs have made, and the offense and everything else around it has kind of picked it up. I think they are expected to kind of be up there and competitive on a nightly basis, but they still have a few missing pieces that they need to get in place before they can be considered a contender. They need another number one or two defenseman without question, and those just don't grow on trees, and the Leafs don't want to overpay for someone like that, so they really have to kind of hit a home run in that situation with the draft. So there's that, and we need to see how Frederik Andersen handles this huge workload. He's played all but six or seven games this year, and former Flame Curtis McElhinney is now the backup here, and he'll get just his second start. So he's got the support system now with someone like McElhinney, who's kind of used to going a very long time without starts. We'll see if Frederik Andersen can handle it. Those are the two things missing before we can really start talking about the Leafs as being a legitimate contender. But that division right now, outside of the Montreal Canadiens, is not very good, and that's what's boding well for Toronto's playoff chances.
But Freddie Andersen, to me, he's been an interesting story because his early season struggles were much, you know, publicized, and it really seemed like the roof was caving in. But once he got through, the first 3 or 4 weeks of the season, he has settled in. He has been a difference maker for them, has he not?
He has been. You mentioned those first 5 or 6 games. It was looking really bad. It was almost one of those things where we could be seeing another goaltending controversy. Jonas Enroth got 4 starts in that time. He never really won a game, and the Leafs made a switch on that. But I think the biggest thing for him was after those 5 games, he just decided to kind of chill out for a bit. And he said he kind of just stayed, disconnected everything, and just watched Netflix when he wasn't at the rink. And he took Mike Babcock's advice, which was when you leave the rink and you go home, do not think about hockey at all. Try and just take it all out of your system, especially when times are bad, because otherwise it just eats at you. And it seems to have resonated with him, because after that point where he just decided to kind of completely shut off, he started to find his game, and he's been pretty good ever since. The last couple of games or so, there's been a lot of goals against, but he hasn't had the puck support in terms of that. So it's interesting to see how he'll do in the second half. Everyone in Toronto's kind of cautious about the second half, because that's usually where the Leafs kind of have those expectations brought back down to earth. But there's a lot of reason to believe that that won't happen this time.
Obviously, you got to ask you about Auston Matthews. I can't remember a more incredible beginning to one's career than his 4-goal opening night against Ottawa. And I know that the offense has come. But as we get into this meat of the year and the games, you know, heighten, how is Mike Babcock using the young centerman? Is he used in a 200-foot game? Is he sheltered? Is he given mostly offensive starts? How do they use him?
So in the beginning of the season, it was a very sheltered spot. They kind of had him in a third-line role. He wasn't going up against the opposition's top players unless on the road, where that couldn't be prevented. But now Auston Matthews is the number one center. It's kind of funny because when they do the order of line rushes, they always have that line, because of how young and inexperienced it is, go third. So when they write it on paper, it's the third line. But when you look at the time on ice at the end of any game sheet, you can see Auston Matthews is leading the way and getting a lot of the tougher assignments. So in the beginning, it was a little bit sheltered. Now, ever since he's worked on his face-off game, face-offs are very big under Mike Babcock, and he's managed to win more draws. He's now starting to have him in a more important role, which might actually affect his offensive output, because he's going to go up against some higher caliber NHLers. But he seems to be handling it very well. And he's been a great decoy for some of the other guys on his line, like Connor Brown and Zach Hyman, two Toronto guys who were not necessarily projected to make this lineup. And he's made them better as a result, and they've made him better. So he's been pretty good in all situations for the Maple Leafs, I would say, thus far.
How much has his success and kind of his attention helped Mitch Marner and Nylander and you know, some of the other, you know, lesser known rookies? I mean, this is a team still playing with a lot of young players with fresh faces. How much has, you know, kind of all of what goes into being Auston Matthews helped the other players?
Well, I think it's huge, because you have Auston Matthews, you have Mitch Marner, and you have William Nylander in 3 consecutive years of the draft, that if you had any one of them, you'd say, that's pretty good for a few years. We can kind of build around them. The Leafs not only have all 3 of them, but they're all on 3 different lines. It's really hard for any opposition to kind of figure out who's the top line here, because you have William Nylander playing with Nazem Kadri, in that line with Leo Komarov, but there's some offensive flair there. And then you have Mitch Marner, this guy, this incredible playmaker who's kind of reignited the game of James Van Riemsdyk and Tyler Bozak in that number two line, that when the opposition like Calgary tonight, it's going to be really difficult for them to kind of figure out who should we really be zoning in on for matchups, because any one of those three lines can bury you. And that's exactly the MO of a Mike Babcock successful team, one that can kind of throw at any one of their top three lines and you really have no idea what's what. So that'll be a lot of the gamesmanship tonight, but for the Leafs, that's been huge for someone like Austin Matthews, because he takes some of the pressure off some of those other rookies who would normally be feeling the scrutiny, and they're allowed to be freewheeling as playmakers, and that's why the offense has been as good as it has been for Toronto this season.
So what is the struggle? I mean, you mentioned they don't, you know, they still need help on the blue line and you know, solidify the goal. I get that. But what gives this Maple Leafs team fits right now? Where do they, who do they struggle against, and where do they struggle?
I would say their biggest problem right now, not from a who standpoint, but situational is their biggest problem. And that's a mark of a rookie team.
Yep.
They'll shoot up the score, but then no game has really ever felt safe for the Leafs this season. So they'll have a 2-0 lead, and going into the third period, it'll be pretty tenuous in their own zone. They'll give up, they'll make little mistakes. It'll be like a small giveaway that will lead to a breakaway, and a small thing like that will allow for the opposition to kind of tie it up. I would say their biggest problem right now is not playing with the same kind of gusto and pressure that they do when they don't have a lead compared to when they have a lead. When they're in the third period and they do not have the lead, it's usually the opposition that's pressing the most. Sometimes it's equal, but Toronto just makes a lot of bad plays in their own end. Small things from their back end that have led to turnovers and small and high percentage opportunities for the opposition that just seem to go in. That's why Toronto has so many games in there into beyond 60 minutes this season. So that's probably been their biggest issue right now. Their first period has been lights out. I believe they're still the best in terms of goals scored in the opening 20 minutes of season. But the last period, protecting leads, has been a big problem for them. It's okay because they're getting points. They're still getting points into overtime and shootout, but protecting those leads has been the number one problem for the Leafs this season, I would say.
Great stuff, Dave. Good to talk to you again. Congratulations and continued success with the Athletic TO, and I hope that venture goes over really well. Thanks for giving us some of your time today.
Hey, appreciate it. Thanks again for having me on. I always appreciate the support.
Dave Alter joining us down the South Street Burger Guest Hotline. Of course, some guests of Sportsnet 960 appear on the South Street Burger Guest Hotline. South Street proudly pairs with craft beers made in this great city. Find out more about this at one of their four fantastic locations at southstreetburger.com. And, of course, Dave was our guest on Inside Hockey for Calgary Co-op, brought to you by the pump that pays at Calgary Co-op, where members earn refunds simply by filling up at Co-op. Well, that will do it. Good show today. We'll do it all over again tomorrow and see if we can't get it right. The Calgary Flames taking on the Toronto Maple Leafs. Thanks to all of our guests, including John Winwick from ATB Financial, and, of course, ATB Financial helping out Team Giordano, trying to get as many followers as possible for the captain of the Calgary Flames on Twitter. You can follow Mark Giordano at MarkGio05. And hopefully we can get some more on board for that. Derek Will spent some time with us, Eric DeHatchuk. Tomorrow we will hear from Chris Johnson, among others. The next live in-person voice you will hear is that of Pat Steinberg, who has Flames warm-up as Calgary taking on the Maple Leafs next here on Sportsnet 960, The Fan.